Welcome to the Second Shift commentary for episode 113, The Last Home You Will Ever Know, part 2, Flight. Fight. The first one was Flight. We're clever. I am John Tanzer, the greatest, and by which I mean the largest of the writers. We are...
Neil Marsh, I play Porik.
Tivin Weinstock, I'm the composer.
Becky Harrington Dewis, I play Shauna.
Hold on.
Brad Smith, Jareth, and other things.
The reverb. So, I remember you guys.
Okay, so.
Oh, we open in a dungeon.
I remember you guys had a lot of trouble sorting out the reverb.
Yeah, I wish Andrew was here for this one because I think he's the one who did this. And it was one of those things where listening to the previews on headphones, it sounded fine. A lot of people, especially in the web quality, what we call the low quality recording.
Are you okay?
Yeah, they had a lot of trouble understanding this.
Yeah, people did say that. I remember that too.
It sounds great on the high quality version, but yeah, the reverb can really screw up a low res copy.
Let's call it an experiment.
I guess I can understand if I didn't know the script, I would have a hard time making out what Mike was saying.
Catherine, are you okay?
Because he's way off in the distance in the reverb.
It was very important for us, though, when writing it, that they not all be stuck in the same room together. It mostly just because it seemed too easy, and we like putting the characters through as, you know, vicious a ringer as we can. But, you know, these are potentially dangerous people, some of whom are quite powerful magically and some of whom are not. So, you know, they are having to be locked up under different circumstances. So,
well, because if they put Shauna or Fesmer in with anybody else, they could just take off the tail.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What did you say?
Oh, and here's some actual Charandran.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
What's this thing on my neck?
The translation pendants are gone from some of them.
Yeah. So, just for the record, the title of this scene, and they do have titles in the script, is Screwed. Just thought I'd throw that out there.
Catherine, does Fesmer
have
one?
Fesmer. What this was translated to the script is, Fesmer, thing on neck?
Yeah, actually, here we go. We can give subtitles.
Oh, that's a good idea. Give the translation. Because, like, that one was funny.
Thing on neck. Yes, I think it is a Teod.
It's cutting me off from Odie.
So, I don't know.
Not the dog.
It's like a lump of anti-magic.
Did we ever actually wind up with that joke in the
series? Yeah, that joke did make it into episode 2 or 3 or something.
When Mike's explaining this.
I know it was written and cut like 4 or 5 times.
Mike's explaining how the kitchen works, I think, is the one where the scene where that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Odie stuff, magic, not the dog.
Yeah, he did say that. Yes, he did. Then we were betrayed.
So how do you and Brandon resolve when there's like a joke that one of you thinks is funny, the other one doesn't, or something like that?
Well, generally the trick is, and in the third season with Missy as well, if you don't think a joke is funny and that there should be a joke there, you make it funnier. Like, you usually just don't cut the joke and rewrite it, you know, an entirely different joke.
Brandon actually getting to voice actor. Sorry.
Collaborate on the joke, you know? Like, that's just what you do when you're writing comedy. Collaboratively, you bounce the joke back and forth, and hopefully it gets funnier each time.
Uh-huh.
If something's a gem right off the bat, it usually stays if it fits.
So, nice to meet you.
Sometimes it doesn't, though. You can write something really funny, but it just doesn't work. It has to go.
Lord Pasti den Hebel Cha.
What is this?
Where is Brandon? Yeah. We should have had Brandon here for this bit.
What's the translation of that?
You're the most annoying person.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Why must you keep talking? You may be the most annoying person I have ever met. Please just stop talking.
Just as frustrated as Caleb is sounding right now. That's about how much Brandon wanted to be voice acted.
Here we go.
Woolia to see.
And
there's
my first pronunciation of Turandrant.
Nice office.
So we have Neil Marsh here, and wanted to talk about kind of how he got pulled onto the show, and this is his first episode.
Sorry, I'm listening to myself butcher the Charandran.
Oh,
unfortunately, Brandon isn't here to share the story about how Neil got hired onto the job, so to speak.
Yeah, I first heard about the show from Julia, who was stepping in to stage manage a show that I was doing with the community theater for one night. And she comes up to me and she goes, you're the Chicken Heart guy. And she's referring to a radio drama that my group has done. And she's like, I'm involved in this really great show and you ought to listen to it. And like every night after that, she was like, Did you listen?
Nice.
So after the show was over, I went and I started listening to the series. And I at the end of the second episode, I was completely hooked on the show and just drooling over the show. And some weeks later, I got an email from Julia saying, hey, you might be interested in this. And it was a notice about casting for the show's first villain. And I thought, well, why not give it a shot? But I had already met Andrea, and I didn't want them to feel like they should give me the part, so I told her to submit my recording anonymously.
Yes, it was so
what was the name that she used? I don't remember.
It was John Doe.
Was it John Doe? I thought it was like, I thought she called you like Bubba or something.
I think she referred to me as Bubba, but it was John Doe. And I did a recording with the lines as is and trying the accent, and the day before the episode was actually to be recorded, 2 days before the episode was actually recorded, I got an email from Julia forwarded from Andrea saying, okay, it's time for your friend to own up. Tell him to call me. So I called Andrea in Vancouver and started giving me the talk that all the people get involved in the show get. And it took her a minute to realize, you do know me, you've met me before, and it was like, I described when we met, and she was like, oh, it's you! Oh, good, that's like 15 minutes of stuff I don't have to talk to you about. So she talked and talked and talked and talked, and I just assumed I was still being interviewed, and then, had a great conversation about the show and everything, and hung up, and next day I was at lunch, and I got a phone call from Brandon, and he says, so okay, you're on, you got the part. I'm like, great, and he goes, and we record tomorrow.
That's uncannily like my introduction to the series, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
Pretty much.
Which
you
talked about at length in the first couple of series.
Poor Brandon did not get the communique that you did not know that you had already been officially hired.
I didn't realize I had actually been given the part.
He called up to see if you were coming to the rehearsal.
The rehearsal, which was an hour before the recording session, right?
That's right. Travel a bit.
Yeah, so it was the first time I'd met Becky as well, and it was very nerve-wracking. Yes, we've been close ever since. Pardon me.
I guess we'll have plenty of time now.
We'll make it back sometime.
Hey, we talked over the entire scene of introducing our first villain type character.
So I was gonna say, how did you guys get 13 episodes into a show and not have a villain?
When Neil mentioned that, I hadn't really realized that, we didn't really have a villain per se for the bulk of the first season. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I had not really appreciated that.
The conflict was all between the characters because they bicker so much.
But it's certainly a defining aspect of season one, the fact that there isn't really unifying conflict. All the characters just interacting with each other.
Mother told me you were dead. I loved this scene when we did it because the idea of being able to do a scene where a person is reunited with a brother that thought he was dead and hadn't seen in all these years and being so calm about it while the brother is going,
Well, Quark at least knew that
it's true.
Was alive
it's true.
The whole time.
But the thing about the biscuits was like, he's like, but how did you? Well, he gave me the recipe shortly before he died. He goes, no. How about? Piece it
together. Why should a simple riverboat pilot?
Our real thing, and I think we listening to it again. I think we largely succeeded. It's really not to introduce him as a villainous character, just introduce him as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of holding to our whole thing that there are no villains in real life. They're just people who do things that some people consider bad and others that do things that other people consider good.
I think we had somebody on the forums that did comment that Porik came off too much like a Bond villain in this because he was monologuing too much.
Yeah, he was a polite villain and stuff like that.
Yeah, but I liked about the character description was that he was much more like Claude Rollo in The Hunchback of Notre Dame. His determination as a monk, his determination, his sole focus was on finding a way to convert, lead into gold and to make money for the church to expand the church's power. And in a way, that's a lot of what Porik is like. It's like the survival of the Brotherhood is the most important thing because he firmly believes the Brotherhood is the way to make Amarand a better place.
To your new friends.
That's, I think, what's so great about the show, actually, especially into season two. There's sort of this moral ambiguity. You don't know really who's right and who's wrong. It's not just good and evil. And I think that's really what at least for me, keeps it really interesting.
Yeah, that was a central thing that when I first came on the project, I may be repeating things that were said in earlier commentaries, but when I first came onto the project, I was sort of like, what's the theme of the show? We really need a theme of the show. And that is what we clicked on pretty much immediately. From what was there in the rough scripts that Andrea had, that what would make them better and what would make the arc of the show better was the centerpiece of the moral ambiguity that everyone basically does what they believe is right. Even, horrible, violent people believe they are right in their actions, usually. So we have a cast of characters who all, they basically all think they're right. And all of the different aspects of their personalities tend to come from that, from, from straightforward stuff like Catherine's bullheadedness. Mm-hmm. To Shauna's self-sacrificing attitude, to Porik's personality.
Yes. We just passed the key line. When Porik is talking about having to sort of advance their timetable because it didn't want Shauna to leave, he says it's time to meet your interesting and beautiful young friend.
Foreshadowing.
I shall have Kyla escort you back to your accommodations. Boxin will fi that we did not have anything more comfortable, but we do not possess many secure options. Neither the inn nor the barracks seemed appropriate choices.
Now, I'm interested in seeing how people warm up to Porik in the upcoming episodes. So far we've had one that sort of starts to build his character a little bit, and I hope it's not giving away too much that he will show up again.
Well, he didn't die, so if Kylo came back, Porik would certainly come back.
It's nice to have a job, even for a little while.
Habit of holding prisoners inside.
Home sweet cell.
So
Brandon never really could do that accent.
He hated
that he had to do it.
You know that scene in the movie where the hero has dinner with the villain? Well, that's just what happened. Sounds villainous organ music.
So what do they want?
I don't really know.
Because the organ hasn't been invented yet.
We considered him playing an organ or something like that, but decided
no,
it would be too much.
No.
So, John, I've noticed this, that sometimes the characters will do something that's kind of a pop culture throwback and then comment on the fact that they're doing that. Is there a particular process that you guys use for balancing that?
I think a lot of times when we realize we've accidentally made a pop culture throwback, we comment on it.
Quick, we gotta cover it!
Covering our tracks.
Isn't that like all of Captain Laserbeard?
It's a large portion of our humor in general. It's just something that makes sense, I think, for the characters, because they are very pop culture induced. We toned it down from what the original concept was going to be a lot, but still we kept a lot of the jokes and the pop culture gags. And Shauna's seen James Bond movies. She knows the having dinner with the polite villain scene. She's gonna that is her frame of reference to describe what just happened. She's gonna use it. We're not a horror movie starring characters who've never seen a horror movie in their life. And they go into the dark room alone,
kind of loses its effectiveness if they don't have some expectations of it. Well, they have to have somebody to play, to be the people that the listeners will relate to.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say anything about it to him.
And of course, I always find a way to work this in, but the classic example is Doctor Who when it started. They had the mysterious main character, they had the daughter, the granddaughter to appeal to the kids, and then they had the two teachers who sort of explained everything to the audience at home.
Yeah, that was a key element of season one, was having the whole thing shown through the eyes of the three characters from Earth. I mean, we don't have a single scene without at least one of the characters eavesdropping on it, you know? Because it was really important to establish this world through their eyes, to help establish it for the listeners the way we wanted to. We banded that in season two because I think we had, you know, earned that enough.
Like
everyone knew the characters enough.
What do you want, Archon? I wish to speak.
This is a hard scene. I don't have time. After the revelation of the previous episode, sort of confirming or finally putting the nail in the coffin, as it were, after 108, that
I don't want anything to do with you.
I really feel for Archon in this scene, because you know, being stuck in a position where it's like your folks are involved in a group that you don't really like, and they tell you what you have to do, and if you don't do it right, they beat the crap out of you, you know, just.
You say
I was about to say.
The last comment. One
it's
of the
sort of
commentaries.
By broadcast training. It's like.
Oh, sure. But in one of the other commentaries, Brandon was telling me that the writers always put in crud for Shauna to say, and I always say something else because I'm like, crud. Who says crud?
It's a good filler. But yeah, Archon's betrayal, that was something that Andrea thought of shortly after, like, the second day that I was on board. I was on an instant message chat with her after I had read over the script the first time. And I actually have that saved somewhere. It's kind of funny to read now. But she said, you know, we're talking, and she says, ooh, I had a great idea. What if Archon's a bad guy?
I remember it.
And it's just sort of like, But, you know, we thought about it. We didn't just go, that's silly. We thought about it, and it actually added a lot to her character, because her character was in a real state of flux at that point.
Yeah, we didn't know what
we didn't really know what she was. And putting the fact that she's a liar and a traitor into her character in a way that didn't, you know, make her a horrible, horrible person who, you know, betrayed our central theme to our show, helped us build her character a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
And not just us, Julia was pretty, had a lot of opinions on what her character could do and should do as well, which helped, I think. Plus just the tone of her delivery. She's very good at being sad.
She's very nuanced.
Oh, and there's just more of it to come.
Yeah.
Come in, Shauna. Would you care for anything to eat, to drink?
Well, it's kind of funny. Somebody on the forums actually did some drawings of the characters, and Archon almost looked a little bit like a heavier version of Violet from The Incredibles. Had this very sort of emo girl thing going on that I totally hadn't because I'm used to seeing everybody looking like, you know, the people who play them. But I totally saw that something really clicked when I saw her drawn that way, and it really made a lot of.
I think back in the original idea, like, what, you know, like I said, before we redefined her character, she was like kind of vampish in a way, you know, like sexy goth girl type of thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh.
You never once decided to leave.
I mean, not that the listener can't imagine her as a sexy goth girl if they want, but that did not wind up becoming an important part of her character.
On the off chance that they enjoy thinking about such things.
Well, it brings up an interesting
Julie
point
would be flattered, I'm sure.
About the fact that we've decided never to really define who people look like. And at the beginning of the show, this was a big question. We said, are we going to have visual representations on our website and in our forums, and are we going to have these kind of pictures? And ultimately, we debated about it a long time, and we decided not to. We decided it would be better just to kind of occasionally we allude to it, but really barely at all. I mean, Fesmer's a goatee. But
well, when the time comes,
really? And I look like Fabio.
Yes, and you look like Fabio.
Well, when the time comes that the property moves on to some other venue, a visual venue like a graphic novel or animation or something. The 2 or 3 years of the build-up of the show and what the fans think and everything might, and what we think as the people making the show, will probably help create a much better image of them when the time comes to design them.
Plus, in readapting it, we're gonna have to, or whoever's gonna have to, redefine a lot of the show anyway. So not having an official look helps redefine it. I think, in large part, though, from Mark's perspective as writing it, it falls into the same category as narration. It's just something we didn't need. Going back and listening to a lot of old audio dramas and stuff, there just aren't descriptions like that, and it's fine. It's never, you know, it never strikes you as odd that in, you know, Dimension X there's no description of the astronaut. You know, they'll say what the alien looks like, but who cares what the astronaut is? He's got a voice. Whatever your personal experience in life is and your impression of an astronaut or a Boston College student, will help you define in your head what they look like. But, you know, the fact is, in the way our show works, it doesn't matter whether, you know, Shauna's white or black or Irish or whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. So we didn't bother doing it.
Orin has shown us the truth. It may not be a beautiful truth, but it is a practical one.
Also, this is our first time where we really define anything at all about Orin and the motherhood of Orin.
It must be accepted.
It was this speech that hooked me on the idea of wanting to audition for Porik, because the idea of playing somebody who just firmly believes this about something.
Where are you going with this?
Oh. Brad's breaking things.
Yay! It's a hobby.
Writing this was kind of funny. This is one where I think... So there's some times in the show where one of us, the writers, has a really clear idea of something that is said or done, but not necessarily the whole scene.
Brad's just a klutz, everybody.
So what we had was basically, I wrote up a whole, like, several paragraph description of what Porik is thinking. And I broke it up at natural stopping spaces and italicized it, and then added in the character heads. So Shauna says, it literally went, Shauna, wine, Porik, I'm evil, and then an italicized paragraph of what he was supposed to say. Shauna, wine, ? Porik, I'm evil! ! You know, and we just went through and you know, used that paragraph as a basis for all of the lines of dialogue, just so we'd have the structure of the thing.
I'm sure I would want to see that before going into this.
No, it was like I said, that was an in-progress thing.
Well, it's interesting that you said Shauna wine, because I remember in these conversations, it's kind of hard for me to define which parts I was just trying to be sassy and, you know, defensive, and which parts I was kind of actually getting it and actually deciding to listen.
Purposes. But in one fashion or another, you are to become an instrument.
One of our jokes is that it was, we often accidentally, like with writing Catherine, it was easy to write her too Catherine-y, or Mike, you know, too jokey. Shauna was, for various reasons, too easy to write whiny. So whenever it was sort of a filler dialogue, it was wine, Catherine, bitch, joke, you know.
Yeah.
I think the reprise of that is in those little flash animations that Lexi made.
the banner ad.
Oh, those, right.
Okay. That were basically boiled out to that, exactly.
These are for your own protection.
We did it largely, actually, you know, not only to provide that she needs to have a line there, but to remind us that it shouldn't be that, because wine is such a ridiculous thing to see in a line of dialogue that, you know.
We passed one of my favorite Porik lines earlier, which was, you have a habit of... Well, you have a habit of summarizing things in a bitter manner.
Yeah.
And...
Been out with it.
Meek, Books and me and Wolfie.
So is the Legion philosophy coming from any particular place? Evil crime syndicates, like influence wise or anything?
No one specific influence. I've taken a lot of classes on like history and religion and religious art and stuff like that.
Sinjin, do not dismiss
me. I just use sort of a lot of ideas of how these things have evolved, like how did Christianity evolve, how did Judaism evolve, and try to take some of those rules and apply them to a world where there isn't really formalized religion, so it's coming from a more philosophical point, but also a case where the deity, Messiah, what have you, of the religion is actually still there. You know, he may have been silent for, you know, a long time, but, you know,
help us.
Orin is there. Orin is a real force. Like, you don't need to have faith that Orin exists because you could say, hey, there he is. So, yeah, no, it basically, it's a philosophy that evolved into a religion rather than a religion that evolved into, you know, philosophical aspects.
I noticed that a lot of the, most of the arguments that Porik and others make about the Legion are very utilitarian arguments. So it's like the greater good, you know, it's okay to kill 50 people if we save 150 people.
Exactly. Uh-huh. Yeah, that was a key element of it, the practicality.
You lied to me. Did we?
Yes, you.
Because again, the quote pulling from everyone doing something that they believe is right. You know, why are the Legion doing this? What do they believe is right? Well, they believe in a greater good that's worth sacrificing or being, you know, even perceived in a bad light to achieve. Whereas the university believes if their greater good, their goal is very different. They believe in an education. They believe in
that's certainly one point of view.
Sort of an intellectual elite.
So do you understand?
And in the third season, we start to introduce the Hunters, who have, you know, their own philosophy, and a more anarchistic philosophy about what's right.
Shauna Brown, the ability to change that which displeases you. No longer the helpless victim.
I just want to go home.
Definition of power specifically for Shauna.
You do not belong there. You know this.
You're wrong.
Are we?
I haven't listened.
Tell
to
us true.
I almost forgotten about it.
You're trying to destroy me.
Really?
It's not going to work.
Let's really start saying.
Destroy you?
Quite a history.
No, Shauna Brown.
Me having conversations.
We are setting
you free. Yeah, it becomes a key element of hers. The evolution of her character in season 2. And we knew that then, because we knew well before we reached this point that we were going to do 2 seasons at least. So with this episode, we tried to answer a lot of the first season's questions while establishing more the direction that the second season would go in, introducing Porik and his practical philosophies and Shauna's conversations with the Harpies and debate about what's right, Mike and Catherine working together more rather than at odds, and all the stuff that's happening, the sort of stuff we intended to build on later.
We're stupid magic paralyzed!
The class noise was missing.
Or just Shauna, take your pick.
Oh.
Really?
Yeah.
I even thought I made a class plan.
Well, it shows up again in the second season, but I didn't hear it.
Oops. Way to point out our mistakes, Neil.
I only did it because it was done in the early.
Well, I think we had a class noise, but I remembered it sounded to me more like opening a chest or something like that. Fesmer,
Jareth, come here. I'll take your collars off.
Yes, Shauna.
You are not, man?
No, I am not Renan, Meek.
We are 5 strong and unarmed. We must secure weapons. Chagrandi, Shay. Nah.
Well, Caleb over there has a sword.
Where? Also, this was back when when the show's sound effects stuff was still pretty minimal, when they just when you were getting by on your sort of minimal
we're blowing up cities, yeah.
Yeah, well. No spoilers.
We can't leave Archon here for parents of the other big bads to find.
She betrayed us. She is Legion scum. Nothing more.
She's your friend.
She was sent to spy on me. She was never my friend.
So maybe you two have a thing.
I think there's an actual debate here. I also really like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Does.
Here's the pain stick.
Yeah, I think that's something another thing we try to do to sort of make ourselves have a distinct character was to actually have the characters discuss things that they should discuss. Like, a lot of times in movies, it's like, oh, well, come with us. You know, there's not really, there's a decision that's a snap judgment that's made, and sometimes that works and things, but with the confrontational nature of our characters, you know, they're not going to just follow a leader because there isn't one.
Right.
Fine, forget you all. Wait, did Jared just do that?
Shauna's seen a lot. Yeah, but not all of it. There could be surprises.
Great. Let's bring Archon so she can lead us into
yet revolutionary changes.
Does this episode contain the last absolutely not, or was that the previous one?
I'm pretty sure there's an absolutely not in. Oh, actually, this is the one where the lead, there is somebody else gets to say absolutely
right,
not.
Right.
And Jareth gets to give his kind of quasi action hero dry bull wit line.
Yeah, because in season two he gets an absolute. Oh, never mind.
Yes. Yeah. Is there a particular reason?
Here we go.
So much for not getting seen. We're trapped.
Surrender. This is becoming a trend.
There is no escape.
Oh, our fight scene.
Once again, I'm so glad we ended up getting actual extras in this season. Lowering our own voices in post-production.
I know, we've done it so many times too. Stop the minute.
That was good. I didn't realize that this season.
Yeah, I actually thought that was Christina or something.
Really? Oh, yeah. Andrew made fun of me so bad.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just can't do a whole, I don't have much of a range of voice, so I just like, I just did something completely not my voice in any way. And it sounded ridiculous. It gave me a hard time.
It is just you and I, friend. Will you yield?
Absolutely not.
You should not be so...
Yes, there we go.
Kazing!
Norm! Fizmer! Fizmer, are you Rana? Fizmer!
Yeah, we got a good meaty squish sound.
Yeah, that's where Mike learns that it's not all about the game.
How bad is it?
Is he? Unconscious, but bleeding rapidly. The cut is deep and long across his back. I will need to retrieve a knife from one of the fallen legionnaires, Senjin.
Here, what are you doing?
Kate, help me with
this
shirt.
This is another one of those bits that, when I was reading the script, I was just like, oh!
Yeah.
That's hardcore!
Yeah.
There. I suppose no one has any salt or ink. Well, that is more than enough blood with which to draw the array.
Mike, are you okay?
Huh? I mean, geez.
Yeah. Yeah. And the way you put a little inflection on the word blood.
Yeah.
Just to show how much it disturbed you to say. It was perfect.
He's building a healing array out of Fesmer's blood. That's just...
His childhood friend.
Yeah, I mean, that's intense.
It's intense.
Thank God.
God. There's blood all over me.
Seriously.
Look at me. It's going to be okay.
Will Fesmer be all right, Jared?
I need to stabilize his wounds. We need to find somewhere safe.
You know, you're absolutely right. I mean, this really is, like, the game is over now.
Yeah.
Like, you thought the game was over when Mike fell off the roof and all that, but this is really the next big milestone in Mike's development and in that shift to, like, we're playing for real now.
Yeah.
In the second season.
Well, Mike's just the kind of guy who needs something big to shake up his personality. Some people can evolve slowly, like Catherine slowly lightens up or gets more intense throughout the series. You know, like she gets more and more fussy and then she realizes she's being a bit of a pain and calms down. But Mike's the type of guy who needs big things to happen to him. Like
cleaning someone in two
or killing somebody.
Now go, all of you. Waste no time and be safe.
What he's done in actuality.
This isn't a video game.
Yeah.
There's always somebody who says, this isn't a game.
Now, I remember Brandon's direction for this episode. It was really hard for me because we were...
Where now, left or right?
Were those trombones?
Yes, left.
Yes.
To the right,
horns, maybe. I don't remember. I use... they're all samples. I didn't actually get out my trombone and play this.
Don't disillusion us all.
Well, yeah, it's been a while since I've gotten it out. I live in a small apartment.
Your neighbors, yeah.
Yeah, so... but yeah, this is the first sort of part of music that we hear a lot of in the... in this
Brandon.
Episode and in future episodes in season 2.
I had to re-record that line because I got the names wrong.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so I just want to say something. And it's funny that Brandon just walked in. He returned. But what I was going to say is that Brandon's directing in this episode, it was kind of hard for me because Shauna was doing this thing where I was kind of emotional. I was kind of non-emotional in a way. And
here is an opportunity to make a choice for yourself.
Like, we had kind of figured it out. Sort of, like, I had figured things out and I wasn't going to be all whiny anymore. And it was kind of the evolution of what the new Shauna is supposed to be, which is kind of hard to figure out. And so in a lot of this, next couple scenes, I'm, like, oddly not emotional.
I'm afraid I cannot allow you.
Here's the part that...
No one's asking your opinion. Now move! I already killed one man with this axe. Don't make it a twofer.
I'd also desire to allow your friends to live. I knew they were important to you, but now I realize they are halting your growth. It pains me to do this, but... Fire Claw
Odin. No, you don't! Mike!
My hand! I am order.
Move! Come on!
Actually, no, I don't remember which lines were done async for
all
us.
Of them.
Oh, all of them.
It was Becky and Neil.
You're right, it was just me and Neil.
Yeah,
and you.
And you did all those parts, and then the rest of them came in and pretended they were being menaced by the script.
Well, you were in the room, so...
So, I have to say something about that pork just getting his hand chopped off, because that was a lot of fun.
Oh, God. How many times did we reach...
Me and Neil got... we started a great tradition of getting really into our scenes together. And we had... We wanted to get the timing just right, and so we actually acted out a whole thing where, like, we took, like, I don't know, a piece of cardboard or something and, like, slammed it on your wrist so you could get the real reaction.
Yeah, but role-playing our scenes together, which we did a lot of for 206 and 209,
right.
Was really, really helpful.
Right, and we have a blast doing it.
Oh, yeah.
It's really fun.
Don't attack them, just run! In here!
Arm still moving.
That's not Porik's arm, by the way.
For maybe a minute, and then we're trapped.
We're chock full of dismemberment this episode.
It's our most dismembery episode ever.
It is.
It's dismembered.
I don't think we've ever dismembered any more people. No, that's not true. There's an episode with some decapitation.
Oh, yeah, there might be one
more.
Of those.
Yeah.
Just as long as Porik's hand's not in a bubbly container and torchwood, right?
You know, Becky, we were talking earlier about how Lexi just reads all the lines and you refuse to. I actually just thought of a case where Lexi refused to read a line.
Oh, which one's that?
I think it was, a rickety old barn, a faboo, or something like that. She would not say faboo.
That line is so not Catherine.
Yeah, I don't see Catherine saying faboo.
Well, it's a sarcastic one.
Well, it was funny. We were talking and Neil said something about crud, and I said, oh, hey, you say crud. I guess it really is just
me. Well, I usually actually say the other word, but it's sort of my trained radio broadcasting habit of, like,
did everything right.
Keeping track of what I'm saying before I open my mouth and say something really hipping stupid.
You always have to use my full name. My middle name's Murray, for the record.
Yeah, wasn't there like a mailing list thread where we were trying to decide what Shauna's middle name was or something like that?
Wasn't really. I remember.
There was an odd amount of debate about it.
There
was an odd amount of discussion about that. I think part of it was that your initials were now SMB after Super Mario Brothers. That was what clinched it, I think.
It's very funny. I just picked Murray arbitrarily because it's my mother's middle name.
Super magical babe.
Sounded good. But yeah, I think people soon pointed out Super Mario Brothers. So it had to work. He is not
Cassie.
Joe.
She's so good.
After every every session in which she has to do the harp, she's like,
enough space. Physical things. Hate it, precious.
Oh, light music here.
Oh God, I can see.
It really is a good effect.
It's a great chord, Tim.
I love the music, and then when it crashes back into the crisis thing, it's awesome.
Alone, unhappy, like us, we reached out, and you reached back. Reach for him, just so.
Tyler.
Shauna?
I'm just listening to it.
Tyler. Yeah. It's so good. It's awesome.
This is amazing. I didn't even have to cast Farspeak. I just wanted it to work.
It's more amazing than it's like 3 in the morning at this point.
Oh, this recording session is forever.
Yes. I think it was a work night, too. And
yeah, you're right. That transition to the music is just, that was fantastic to them.
Is it Mr. Walking Bass Band?
it gives it the driving tension.
There's me just going, what?
Yeah.
Worked so hard for it before. Like, I'm being so flat.
Yeah.
Well, what I wanted to do there was the moment Shauna says yes, we lose her as a viewpoint character. We're no longer privy to what's going on with her thought process or anything.
It's the circle, Catherine.
Decided a different course.
Yeah, we don't see what happens to her after the others leave.
Yeah, at the moment she says yes, we've lost her. At least until we find her again.
What's happened to work stupid magic? I know! Goodbye, Catherine. Shut it down! To Boston.
Oh my God.
Yeah, when I read this part, I was like, oh.
She's waking up.
The air here, it's all...
Kelly did a fantastic job. It's irritating.
Oh, why are you dressed all goth?
She's back. You're up for a little
while.
I think it was a last-minute insertion, too, for people to cough as they woke up in Boston because of the difference in air quality.
Yeah.
We talked about doing that story level, and then we forgot to put it in the script. And I think I got them to do it, like, on the fly.
And then it's carried over.
Yeah.
You've been missing for almost 3 months. Same year as it was in the first hour.
This is another thing that I love that you guys did was you didn't take the cop-out approach and say, oh, no time has passed. Like, they do it almost every other story. You actually say, you've been gone for a while. Now you've flunked out of your classes.
Right.
Now, I think the original plan, as Andrea had it, was for Phesmer to come back. I think she wanted Phesmer to be in.
Oh, really?
And we thought it would be a lot more.
Oh, right, because they're saving Phesmer or something like that. And there were spell cards involved.
Oh, Shauna was going to sacrifice
the original, the original finale of the season, as Andrea had it, was going to be unbelievably different.
Yes.
I don't even remember. Shauna was going to die. Yeah. I remember that. I kind of forget the rest of it, but it was very complicated.
We tried to pay homage to that by implying she might have, and kind of keeping that question open.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh,
but
God.
No one really thinks she's dead.
Oh, no.
Well, what did you think, dear listeners?
Is this the end?
Where's Shauna? Tell me.
But see, that's why I like the fact that it's not ending on is Shauna alive, but it is ending on what happened to Shauna and what's going to happen to Archon. I have spent a lot of time reading these commentaries, sort of like fanboying our own show, but there are a lot of times when I wish that I was a listener, you know, and was like hearing these things for the first time, because it sounds like it'd be really cool. I know reading the script for the first time, there's a bunch of times that I've just been like, damn.
The director of this episode is Brad.
I had to rush, and I think that was posted.
Was this the one take?
I think this might have been.
Nice.
So especially after the... Are we allowed to say this on the comic?
Yes, we're allowed.
I triumphantly, I did this in one take, and then I triumphantly yelled, one take, bitches!
We'd like to thank our listeners.
I think I peaked.
I think I have it now, so that with the last one that I mastered, that that we can loop the closing theme, so people don't have to do the high speed credits anymore.
Oh yeah,
I wrote an extended version. Of
you did, but then we started adding more people.
Oh, and this is another one. Oh yeah, fantastic. sort of spontaneous.
I don't know why you guys did this.
I don't know why we did it. That's the great thing. It just sort of happened. Yeah, it was really late and we were all feeling stupid and it just sort of happened.
We were talking about having a new theme for the next season anyway, so I guess you guys decided to murder it.
R.I.P.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
That's it.
Thanks for listening to season one.
Signing off from sweaty Somerville.
Bye-bye.